What's going on, guys? It's JP from The Double Double, and I'm here with my co-host, Ben.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome.
And today we're going to do a little bit of a rookie update for you guys. Every single summer, me and Ben put countless hours into this process. We're watching film, reading articles, watching highlights, all this stuff to give you a good consensus on what we think will happen in the NBA draft or guys we like better than others. And today we're just going to give you an update on how they're doing so far in their young NBA careers. Obviously, we're going to go from one to however many players we feel like talking about. Let's start with Victor Wembanyama. Ben, how has he played up to this point in the season for you?
It has been a weird year for Victor Wembanyama. I think that's an easy way to put it. He's had a lot of minutes this year where he's a power forward, and they have, you know, Zach Collins or whoever out there at the five, and that was kind of awkward. You know, the numbers are insane. He's putting up 19 points, 10 rebounds, 3 assists. He's one of the league leaders in blocks per game, if not the league leader in blocks per game right now. So he's kind of doing a little bit of what everybody expected, and that's the good and the bad. The inefficiency is something that people expected, and the inefficiency is absolutely there. But then just the show-stopping moments that he has, you know, we've seen a mix of everything.
Yeah. Yeah, he's one of those guys where the special moments look like no other player we've ever seen.
Yes.
But the consistent inefficiency is something that we do have to pay attention to. I think I've mentioned this on multiple podcasts before. I do think the context matters a little bit with him, where their whole team is devout of talent. Like, no one there is good at basketball except for him. And he's being used in a weird way, and his teammates are being used in a weird way. But I also don't want to absolve his shot selection. I do think it's weird, funky, and recently in the media, it's interesting, LaMarcus Aldridge came out and Joel Embiid came out with a similar sentiment for Victor Wembanyama, where it's like, you kind of need to figure out who you want to be. Do you want to be Kevin Durant, or do you want to be Joel Embiid? And LaMarcus Aldridge was saying, like, he's almost too talented for his own good. Because he has the ability to do a whole bunch of things, he can't choose a go-to move to just get his 2 points easily. And I think both of those guys diagnosed Wembanyama's game perfectly. I think he's wildly talented, but a little inconsistent.
That's exactly right, man. This is a guy who is 7'4", who has the same true shooting percentage as Jordan Poole. So, you know, 45%, is that what it is? 44% from the field, 29% from three. It's not what we want to see from him. And it's largely a result of shot selection. It's largely a result of the awkwardness of the team and the fact that he's really not even treated like the best player on the team half the time. If you watch the Spurs, you will be very frustrated at the amount of Victor Wembanyama possessions where he just isn't involved in the play at all. And there are games where that changes. Like the other night against Portland, he put up 30 points really efficiently. But night after night, we don't see him be the guy taking the most shots on the team every single game. I want him in, like, you know, the 20 something shots per game kind of mark, and he's just not there yet.
Yeah, and it makes me think that, you know, if he went to a different situation, what would his rookie year look like? Like, if he had LaMelo as his lead creator, what would that look like? Or if he went to Houston with Ime Udoka and Fred VanVleet there to instill just, like, good habits, or even Portland. I know it wouldn't be awesome to watch, but just, like, what would that look like compared to what he has now with Shaedon Sharpe and Malcolm Brogdon at his side? So, I don't know. It's weird. I think we all celebrated the landing spot when it happened, but I do have a little bit of, like, revisionist history where I kind of wish he went somewhere else.
Yeah, he ended up with the winningest head coach in NBA history, and we're still seeing this version of the Spurs that is unwatchable.
Yeah.
I'm just going to wait for real NBA players to join this team. I think that's something we talked about at the start of the season. This was kind of a year to test how many of these young guys actually deserve to share the floor with Wembanyama moving forward. I think we have some ideas on, like, you know, guys like Devin Vassell, Keldon Johnson. They probably should stick around, but I don't know that they're must-have starters for the team. There's really nobody that I can say has been paired up next to Wembanyama on this team that I really think needs to stick around.
And we see this with transcendent players. Sometimes this is one of your points that you've hammered home over the few years we've done this podcast, is that sometimes generational players get too good too quickly, where teams kind of don't have an answer on how to build the team anymore because their floor is elevated too quickly by a guy like LeBron James, Luka Doncic, and potentially Victor Wembanyama. So the Spurs kind of need to nail this year's draft pick because we don't know how much longer Wembanyama is going to be an inconsistent player.
Yeah, man, it's only a matter of time before he gets his set moves down that, you know, I've got three moves that will be unstoppable every single time. Because you said it before, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge and Joel Embiid made the same point. He's got too many moves. He hasn't really picked. This is my go-to yet. Let's move on. Let's talk about the number two pick, your guy, Brandon Miller. He had a rough start to the summer league and kind of a slow start to, you know, maybe the first two games of the season. But pretty immediately, he showed up as a dude who is an excellent offensive weapon. Talk about Brandon Miller.
He's amazing, dude. I've fallen in love with him. I watched a ton of Hornets basketball to start this year, which is probably crazy for some to hear. But I was watching like basically every Hornets game. And there was a period where Brandon Miller was like shooting 29% from three and people were worried. And I wanted to make sure people understood my position on this. He is one of the best perimeter scoring prospects that I've ever seen, and I had no worries about him whatsoever. And now we're seeing him hover at 40% from three. That is not a coincidence. This guy is uber talented. He deserved to be pick number two. 6'9", I've gone over it a few times, but 6'9", being able to shoot the three ball the way he does, playmake at an average to above average level and defend at an average to above average level. That's what every single NBA team is looking for, and the Hornets were able to get it at number two.
Yeah, I think long term, no matter how good Scoot Henderson ends up, I don't think the Hornets are upset with this pick because there isn't a world where Brandon Miller busts. There isn't a world where this stops being effective. He's an incredible offensive scorer, especially from the perimeter. Pairing him next to a guy like LaMelo, who takes so many threes already. LaMelo's been dealing with injuries. I'm excited for when he comes back and Miller kind of gets a bigger role. And this is just the three-point shooting duo of the new era. This is the Stephen Clay of this new era. I really think it's possible.
And I think what's funny with him is he has a similar way to improve his game that Tatum did. Where Tatum early in his career, he just loved taking jump shots only, and it could get pretty frustrating if he was on a cold night. I think the way Brandon Miller kind of elevates himself to either a star or even an all NBA level guy is just getting to the free throw line more. He's only taken two free throws a game. He's a rookie, so I'm not super concerned about it, but if he can bump that up to five or six at some point while he's shooting 40% from three, I mean, we're looking at a very, very good offensive player. And my comp for him has always been plus Chris Middleton or baby Paul George, one of the two. They're kind of the same guy, but I see that playing out for him still to this day.
The difference between those two guys, I would say, is the defense. Paul George has stepped up into, you know, an all defense caliber guy. Brandon Miller, they have asked him to guard the best player on the other team, the best guard on the other team. He's a little bit too skinny to be guarding wings. And I think, you know, as we were talking about that Tatum thing, as he gets more muscle, the free throws will go up. The driving to the hoop will go up. Right. What are your thoughts on Brandon Miller's defense so far?
Brandon Miller's defense so far has been wildly surprising, honestly. Like, I thought he played defense well in college. I watched a lot of his Bama games, and I thought he was a fine defender, but I thought there would be some struggle heading into the NBA, just with the change of quickness, more physicality, stuff like that. What the Hornets have basically done is thrown him on the best opposing guards, usually, and he's been able to keep up. He's maneuvering around screens. He's chasing guys off screens. He has a ton of chase down blocks this year. There will probably be a nice montage of that for him by the end of season. So this guy's effort is out of this world. His speed and just like his quickness is helping him get around screens and keep with smaller guys. I've been wildly impressed with that part of his game so far.
And I think that's one thing that he needs a little bit more recognition for is the effort and the heart and the drive. Because I don't know about you, but Brandon Miller, as I watched him through his college, as I watched him through summer league, this is an emotionless man. This is not a man who like really looked like he was giving his all 100%. And he was through his play, but just the emotion and the feeling, he kind of just felt like a dude who was cruising through basketball. But you watch him on this Hornets squad, man, and he gives his all 100% of the time. He tries his ass off on defense, even if he gets beat. I think the effort is something that I was really pleasantly surprised by.
Yeah, I know what you're saying with the emotion thing, because the only time I really saw emotion out of Brandon Miller in college was when he was starting a fight with someone. Like, yeah. He has, like, edge where he's, like, a pest and annoying, and that's where you would see his emotion. But on a play-to-play basis, this wasn't a guy, like, falling on the floor diving for loose ball. He is that. He's that guy.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think the Hornets made the correct pick at number two, no matter how good Scoot becomes.
I absolutely agree. Before we move on to Scoot, let's talk about the number two pick from last year's draft, Chet Holmgren. Who is probably going, I mean, I don't know if he's going to win Rookie of the Year. I think it's too early to say, but right now, if I had to give anybody the award, he's the one getting it.
Yeah.
He's averaging 18 points, 8 boards, 2.7 blocks a game, but the efficiency is what's crazy. 65% true shooting. He's awesome, man. He's shooting 40% from 3 on 4 attempts a game. I don't know what the next level for Chet Holmgren looks like. That's what I think about when I watch him. Is the fact that he's only going to get better from this moment. I have no idea what he's going to turn into, but what a great start.
Yeah, I think I misread Chet by a lot. I don't know. You guys can go and listen back to our old podcasts. I was on the Chet bandwagon the entire fucking college year. I was telling everyone he was the number one player. He was the number one player. And then the second I saw Paolo in summer league absolutely demolitioning defenses with his pure physicality, I was like, okay, hold on. This is crazy. But what I always compared Chet to was a poor man's Evan Mobley. And it's looking like Chet Holmgren is rich man's Evan Mobley. he is exactly what I wanted Mobley to be. And I really think, like, he's kind of thrown himself into top 25, top 30 players in the league type conversations as a rookie, right? Because it's the efficiency, it's the raw stats, and it's the defense. Those three put together, like, you have to have weird conversations with, like, would you rather have Chet Holmgren or Jalen Brunson?
I have no idea.
Right. These are, like, coin flip conversations that we're talking about, and we're talking about for just this season, who would you rather have, a rookie or an NBA vet? He's been incredible.
Yeah, it's unbelievable to me to think that he's only gonna get better. He's only gonna get stronger. The rebounding's only gonna get better. The Thunder are such a weird team, and he fits it so perfectly, man. Yeah, I don't know who's gonna win Rookie of the Year or not. He has the efficiency argument. They have very similar counting stats, but Wembanyama's going to end the year with better counting stats. But right. Do we respect the guy who is the third or fourth option impacting winning on a ridiculous scale as a rookie? Or do we respect the guy who is a freak of nature who's putting up stats we don't see from 7'4" guys? I really don't know.
I think they're going to give it to Chet. And I mean, me and you both voted for him in our little awards episode the other day, and I think that will hold up just because the winning pace that OKC is on and how important Chet is to that winning.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, man. I don't even know, like, just Chet as a player, if anybody doesn't know, excellent shot blocker, excellent three-point shooter off the break, really efficient around the rim, and just a heads-up basketball player. He's at 2.5 assists a game. I think that's probably an underrated aspect of who he is as a player.
Big time.
There isn't an area of the floor that he doesn't impact winning in some degree.
Right. So, yeah, OKC, I mean, to have him and Jalen Williams from the same draft is absurd.
Absolutely.
Like, that is a franchise-altering draft, getting those two guys at the same time. Yeah, that they're looking pretty good for the future, for
absolutely.
Sure.
Scoot Henderson, number 3 pick this year. Had a rough start to the season. We can say that for the very least, man.
Yeah.
Very, very inefficient. Turnover heavy. Couldn't hit a 3 to save his life. Couldn't really hit a 2 to save his life. But over the month of December, man, he's really stepped up. And the scoring touch has increased a little bit. The 3-point shooting touch, he's had some games.
Mm-hmm.
He's had 11 assists in multiple games. 2 turnovers in one of them. We're seeing increased play from Scoot Henderson. The Blazers as a team are trash, and it's hard to really judge who this guy is right now. But anybody who wrote him off after the first 12 really rough games made a mistake.
Yeah, and I'm one of the people that, like, instantly switched, like, okay, Brandon Miller is going to be better than Scoot Henderson. It wasn't so much. It was a mix of both of what I was seeing, with Scoot kind of having a struggle heading into the league, and also Brandon Miller just looking extremely comfortable right away. But it wasn't really like, okay, Scoot's never going to figure it out for me. We're starting to see those crafty finishes that made him so special and the playmaking. And if we said this, like if he ever becomes even league average from three, this is an all NBA point guard. And I really don't think I've changed my opinion on that. I watched the Wemby game, Wemby versus Scoot, the other night, where Scoot really, really wanted to be better than Wembanyama in that game, and he was forcing the issue. He took 21 shots that game and had 11 assists. There are some times where he just aimlessly drives into the paint, and because he's such a great athlete, he thinks he'll figure it out in the air. We saw this with young Ja Morant, and Ja has kind of phased that out of his game a little bit and is a little bit more polished heading to the rim. I think some things for Scoot to work on is just discipline with the ball, better shot selection inside, and then obviously raising his three-point shot. But I think he's been okay up to this point. Would you say that's fair?
I think the last month has been really promising, and everything before that was really, really worrying.
Right.
So, you know, we're seeing positive growth, and that's undeniable. The thing that I have had the biggest issue with Scoot that I really didn't expect to be such an issue is the turnovers. This is a guy who, if you watch his highlights coming into the NBA, his court vision is unbelievable. And I still feel that way about him, man. He does that fling pass to the opposite corner for a shooter in the opposite corner better than almost any guy in the league. But just the 3.2 turnovers a game, some of the games are ugly. And I think you're right in the sense that it is just him forcing the issue on shit he shouldn't be. It's an overconfidence thing. It's not a lack of skill. It's a, I'm trying shit I probably shouldn't be trying in this NBA game.
Yeah, because he has the skill to make plays that other players just cannot even dream of. It's just, are you in the right position to make those plays? Are those plays going to help your teammates in this specific spot? Like, there were a few times he challenged Wembanyama at the rim where I was just shaking my head. I'm like, what are you doing,
dude? Right.
Like, but generally, that is the attitude that made him the third overall pick in the NBA draft and such a highly rated prospect, where me and you were highly considering him a all-NBA level potential guard heading into his NBA career. So I'm fine with it. There's been a long track record of rookie point guards really struggling. I'm going to give him a like pseudo pass for that first month, but if I want to see this ramp up continue, that would really help me out with how I view him.
Yeah, man, when you're a small point guard and you are not known for your defense, the transition into the NBA is going to take a while. We've seen it with some guys in the past. I mean, you know, Anthony Edwards is a kind of guy you can talk about like that, who was ridiculously inefficient in his rookie year. Darius Garland had an awful rookie year. He's now a star. This just is what happens when you're a short guard. The transition is difficult. But I have not lost any faith. I still think Scoot Henderson's going to make an All-NBA team at least one in his career.
Yeah, I think like bottom of the floor for him is a few All-Star game appearances, but that's still worth a third overall pick in a landslide. So I think the Trailblazers are fine.
Absolutely. Let's move on to Amen Thompson at number four. And this one's a heartbreaker for me. I'm going to be honest. Amen Thompson is my guy. He will continue to be my guy. The shit that he can do as a point guard is unbelievable. You want a guy with unbelievable court vision and athleticism, and he is that. But the Rockets don't know what to do with him because he can't shoot, and Jalen Green is not the shooter they expected him to be. So they've got this kind of thing where he's almost a wing, but he doesn't play like a wing, and they don't want him to be a wing. It's just been awkward trying to figure out how to integrate him into this lineup. But then the games where you see him in the G League, he's just dominant and clearly the best player on the floor. I don't know how to feel, but I'm still not off of my high praise and my high hopes for Amen Thompson.
Yeah, no, and you shouldn't be. I feel like we've properly rated him as prospects, right? Like, I had my doubts about his scoring. I'm not going to back off that either, but in terms of just who this guy is as a talent is correct. Like, he deserved to be the fourth overall pick.
Yeah,
you're right. The interesting fit with Houston has been a weird start to his career, because they don't want to put him in a position to fail with no spacing around him, but they also aren't giving him the chance to experiment and create with his game. So he's kind of in this no man's land. I don't know. It's been weird. I feel bad for him, and I feel bad for Rockets fans.
My ideal Rockets lineup has Şengün and Amen as the main two guys setting up the team. And then, you know, Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, Jabari as guys who can shoot. Obviously, that lineup doesn't have Fred VanVleet in it, and he's maybe the most steady dude on this team. Yeah. Bringing in Fred VanVleet always was going to make this difficult, always was going to make it awkward. And the thing about Amen Thompson is, even in the limited minutes that he's played, I don't know that he has impacted winning for the Rockets in a way that's noticeable, but the skill is all there. The abilities are all there. There's nothing... Amen Thompson isn't struggling in the ways that you wouldn't expect him to struggle. Of course he can't hit a three. Look at his jump shot. But, you know, the passing is still there. The athleticism is still there. I'm just waiting for... It's probably going to take an injury to a guard before Amen really gets the run that he probably deserves.
Right. And, you know, obviously we hope everyone stays healthy and, you know, we want the Rockets to succeed. I've enjoyed watching them a ton this year. They're higher up on my league pass rankings than I thought they'd be. But I would kind of like to see Amen get some run. Like if Jalen Green needs a, you know, 2 weeks off because of a sprained ankle, like a minor sprained ankle, and Amen gets to show Ime kind of like why he should play him a little bit more, I would love that. But I obviously keeping everyone's health intact. I would love to see an opportunity open up for him. Unfortunately, like you said, it does seem like it may only come from an injury.
I think that's all it's going to take, though. Ime is a dude who respects defense and respects guys who are heads up NBA players, and that is Amen Thompson. So once that injury happens, I really think that's all it takes for him to get minutes and really kind of force his way into this lineup.
My retort to that, though, would be, does the shooting make that difficult? Like, even if he comes in, plays well, but he stays at sub 20% from three, is Ime still going to make him a staple of the lineup when Jalen Green gets back?
It's a great question, man. And it all comes down to probably how good of a shooter is Jalen Green. In his good games, he's awesome. He's at 35% for the year. That's about average. But we see the 2-for-9, 2-for-11 from three kind of games from Jalen Green. Would you rather have that, or would you rather have Amen Thompson impacting winning on the rest of the game? I know what I would choose, but again, I've been high on this guy since the very beginning, and I think I'm a bit blinded.
A little bit. That's okay. I've been there. I've been there with Mobley, bro. Let's go to Asar Thompson, his twin brother, who got drafted fifth to Detroit. Obviously, Detroit just went through a historic losing streak. I'm very glad I said what I said at the beginning of the season, where Brandon Miller's just better than the Thompson twins. I'm very glad I said that. Asar was really exciting for the first week or two of the season. This dude is shooting 15% from three, and there are games where he takes like seven threes. This isn't a guy who takes one a game. Like, he is shooting them, and he's missing every single one. His defense is exciting. He's an all-NBA caliber defender as a rookie, which is incredible. But this is the triple single king of the NBA right now. In terms of how he fits with Detroit, I don't know if there's a worst fit in the league. I just don't care about Asar Thompson at all as a rookie. I just don't care at all.
It's really rough, man, because in the first, you know, let's say 10 games of the season, the Pistons were 2-8, and they were definitely a bad team, but you saw, like, Asar's defense is unbelievable. Yes, he can't shoot the ball very well, but the defense is crazy. There's got to be a way this guy just fits into the lineup. And then there weren't other competent basketball players on the team. Yeah. So there is no lineup yet for the Pistons where Asar as a total non-spacer really fits. And we see games where Asar Thompson will play, you know, 11 minutes in the first half and then zero in the second half, like he did against Boston in that loss. 8 minutes the game before that and lost to Brooklyn. You know, part of this is Monty Williams probably should be removed from coaching. I don't even know if that's real. I don't know if it's his fault. The team sucks. But how do you only play your number five pick 8.5 minutes in a game that was never competitive in the first place? I don't know, man. I love Asar's defense. His rebounding for a wing is unbelievable. And it's the effort. That's really all it is for Asar Thompson. He's a guy who's go, 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 go at all times. But the shooting is not there.
Asar almost reminds me of a Bruce Brown level impact, where, like, on a championship team, he would be the guy that would, like, you know, prop up a championship team and give them great either bench minutes or important wing defense minutes or something like that's just kind of where I see him on a championship team as maybe like the fourth or fifth best player.
Like an Andre Iguodala type.
Perfect. Literally perfect comparison. Thank you. That was way better than my Bruce Brown poll. But yeah, that's what I see for him. And that's a very good NBA player. I want to make that clear. But his context, what he's surrounded with, which is the worst shooting crew in the entire league for a guy whose only skill set is getting to the paint and passing to shooters on offense. Those are his only redeeming qualities. It couldn't be a worse fit.
Yeah, he's a great facilitator, but it was the sort of thing where when you watched him in OTE, his best facilitating was done without a dribble. If you passed him the ball at the free throw line, he was going to make the right read every time. But as soon as you ask him to start dribbling, it's turnover city. And, you know, there's too many issues going on in Detroit right now to even focus on the things that Asar is doing wrong and figure out how to fix it. I think when spacing comes to this team, we will see better play from Asar. I think that's kind of obvious. The spacing is so pathetic on this team right now. But yeah, the flashes, I don't think this kid's making an all-star team. But I think you're right in the sense that, like, this is the sort of player where when you're a championship caliber team, you want a guy like this.
Yeah. Like, I think that's the perfect Andre Iguodala, what you said. Yeah. A bench guy who's absolutely great at the few things he's out there to do. That will be Asar Thompson.
Let's
move on to Anthony Black, who is also another huge, huge fan. You are a huge, huge fan of his. Give me your breakdown of how you've thought he's played so far up to this point.
I love Anthony Black, man. I have loved Anthony Black from the beginning. Something about tall guards who have heads up, who are heads up NBA players. I just want to watch you succeed. Anthony Black had the same kind of shortfall as the Thompson twins. He's not a great shooter. He's only taken 1.5 threes a game, and yeah, it's at 35%, but that doesn't really mean much. The points, the statistical averages are about nothing. He's putting up 5.5 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, but he started in almost every game for the Magic so far, and he's a big part of the reason why their defense is as good as it is. I don't expect excellent offense from Anthony Black. I don't know that I ever did, but the defense is what I expected it to be.
Yeah, he is a... he's the third Thompson.
Basically.
He is a Thompson triplet.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable defense at the point of attack. Heads up cutting and heads up playmaking and not a whole lot else. It's been very important to what Orlando's identity has been this year, which is just absolutely smother teams and win by four. You know, he's been a integral part in that strategy. But like I said, at draft time, like, I don't know if there was a fit I hated more on draft night. Obviously, the Asar Thompson one has taken over the Anthony Black to Orlando fit. But in terms of his personality and, you know, skill set, it seems like he's actually a better fit for Orlando than I thought. Unfortunately, Orlando still kind of struggling with what I thought they were going to, the three-point shooting. But in terms of how Anthony Black has played, for him to be close to that 36% mark from three, even though it's on like minuscule attempts, it gives me a little bit of hope that maybe he'll bring some spacing next year. I think he's been exactly what they've wanted from him, so I can't bash the pick at all.
I'm not worried about his lack of shot attempts at all. Jalen Suggs is kind of coming into his own as an offensive player, and they've needed that. Cole Anthony off the bench does his thing scoring. And then you've got Paolo and Franz, who you want taking 20-some-odd shots a game. Anthony Black has only had five games so far that he's taken more than six shots in a game. So he's not out there to shoot the ball. He's out there to make the extra pass, get the right guys involved, play good defense. In the one game he took 13 shots, he had 23 points against Washington. So maybe there is a little bit of scoring in there, but the Magic certainly don't need it on a game-to-game basis, and he has no problem taking three shots and making sure everyone else gets involved.
Yeah, I want to take back what I just said, actually. I can't hate the pick is what I said. I do still kind of hate the pick, even though I think he fits the identity of the team well. I still prefer them taking shooting. But yeah, he's been a good pick, and I'm happy for Magic fans because I think what his selection has done is allowed them to parlay Markel Fultz into something else, which I think it could be very beneficial.
I think so, too. Yeah, I mean, and you look at the top 10 selection – you know, Koulibaly was never going to be taken by the Magic. Jairus Walker might have been the name that went there. Taylor Hendricks might have been the name that went there. But there wasn't like a, this is the guy you need to take Orlando at number six. People feel that way now about Jordan Hawkins because of the way he was shooting, but he was not a guy who was ever pegged as a top 10 pick.
No. Let's go to number seven, who I always get confused about this, but it is Bilal Koulibaly, who is selected seventh to the Washington Wizards. I was higher on him than most, I think, at this spot, and he has really impressed me. This is a guy who is spacing better than I ever thought would space. His weakness coming into the draft was this guy's a baby. He doesn't know how to shoot, and he's just a slashing wing. And he has kind of put that to rest already in my eyes, where he's shooting 40%. I understand it's low attempts, but he's getting opportunity. He's driving to the paint, making kickout passes, hitting his open threes, playing great defense. Like, I think this is a slam dunk pick, and he's a baby. He's so young. So there is a timeline with him where they can get him, you know, by the time he's 2021, what does he look like in 3-4 years? I'm pretty excited about the Bilal Koulibaly pick for the Wizards.
I genuinely have to eat so much crow with Bilal Koulibaly. Like, I was pretty certain this guy's not like a legitimate NBA player. Sure, he could fill the end of a bench. But, you know, just a guy who kind of knows how to play basketball, but is not talented in the ways that you want a basketball player to be. I was so low on this guy, and I've been proven wrong. If you watch Wizards basketball, Bilal Koulibaly's fine. Man, there are, you know, a dozen problems you could bring up before we get to anything Bilal Koulibaly does wrong. He has been a really fun rookie to watch in a really, really not fun situation over there in Washington. I can only think about how is this going to improve when he gets real basketball players around him, when the Wizards are like a genuinely good team that are fighting for something.
And I also like how he has a defined role. We talked a little bit about that with Amen, how he's struggling with that. Like, Koulibaly is not able to just take as many shots as he wants and try to explore who he is as a player. I kind of like that they're like, no, you're coming off the bench and you're doing these things for us. You're running to the spot up three, you're driving and kicking. And he's super comfortable doing that. And I think he's like on his way to perfecting these skills at some point in his career because of this early foundation that the Wizards coaching staff has built for him. So I've been very impressed by his young start.
Yeah, man. I don't think there's a world where Bilal Koulibaly busts. I don't think there's a world where we see anything other than like a competent sixth, seventh man for his future. You know, obviously with Kyle Kuzma being the best player on the Wizards right now, it kind of hurts Koulibaly's chance to get a lot of minutes and a lot of run. But you're right in the sense that, you know, any team could take him and say, you are going to hit corner threes for us, you're going to slash when we need you to slash, and you're going to try your ass off on defense. He's another one of those guys that would be an impact guy wherever he was.
My, like, absolute max outcome for Bilal right now is a better playmaking OG Anunoby. That's kind of what I see, where he could hover around 15 points, 5 rebounds, maybe, like, 4 assists, but give you, like, some all-NBA-level defense. Obviously, maybe not to the extent of OG because he's so much bigger than Bilal, but that level of player, and I think that's a third or fourth option on a championship team. So I think I'm a big fan.
And he's got, what, 7'3"? It's a 7'3 wingspan. It's 6'6". So when he starts to add muscle, he could get to that size. He could be a beast of a wing defender. I don't think we've seen that yet, but we've definitely seen the potential for him to be an excellent defender.
The next pick would be Jairus Walker to the Indiana Pacers. We spoke a little bit about this pre-podcast. This is a frustrating one for both of us because we really liked Jairus Walker as a prospect. And for a team in Indiana who desperately needs help on the defensive end of the ball, Jairus Walker feels like a kind of perfect piece to put in there, but he's only played 9 NBA games. And in all of those games, he's had extremely limited minutes. So you have to kind of give him a failing grade up to this point, but I almost kind of don't blame him. This feels like a Carlisle hates young players type of thing. I don't know if you feel the same way.
I feel the same way. And especially when, you know, we've got that soundbite of Rick Carlisle talking about how nobody on the Pacers can guard anybody. Jairus Walker is an excellent defender. I don't exactly remember our comp for him, but thinking about it now, it's something along the lines of like a body of Julius Randle, but like the energy of like a Kenneth Faried. Like he's just he's an animal defensively. You see ridiculous stuff from him, but we just don't see it in the NBA right now. He's just dominating the G League, and maybe it's a thing where 50, 60 games into the NBA season, Rick Carlisle decides to give him some run. I think that's a shame. We saw it with Mark Williams last year. Was it last year?
Yes.
Took the Hornets way too long to play him, and the second that they did, he was just an NBA-ready guy, and of course he was. That's how I feel about Jairus Walker.
That's a really good comp. I like that a lot. And I think what's weird with the Jairus Walker thing, too, is like you can go back and listen to us. He had the highest block percentage by a power forward in NCAA history. So this is a guy that is not only great at individual defending, but as a help side defender is fantastic. And you have Miles Turner protecting the rim. Rick Carlisle must be seeing something I'm not, where he's not giving this guy minutes. But I loved him out of college, and I'm a little bummed, but I do feel like it's because Rick Carlisle is his head coach. He's not playing right now.
I think you're absolutely right. We're moving on to a similar story with Taylor Hendricks at number 9. He's only played 11 games so far, and in those games, he's really not been given a lot of run. This is a dude, in my eyes, who is about as NBA-ready of a prospect as there is. You want a guy who can hit really good threes off the catch? That's exactly what he can do. You want a good weak side help defender? That's what he can do. But in terms of what have we seen from him in the NBA so far, unfortunately, it's very little.
Yeah, which disappoints me because both of us, like you just said, 6'11", stroking threes and playing good defense. How many teams are saying no to that guy? I do think it is a developmental tactic from Danny Ainge. I think he's slow playing this Utah thing big time because Bryce Sensabaugh has only seen limited minutes as well in the NBA. He's been basically exclusively G League. It's weird. We'll get to another player on their roster that's a rookie also who's gotten a ton of playing time. I'm curious what the difference is between his philosophy with Keontae George and Taylor Hendricks, where one is getting a lot of playing time and the other one is not. Because in terms of prospects, I viewed Taylor Hendricks as the more pro-ready one. So I don't really know what's going on.
Maybe this is a Danny Ainge thing. Maybe you can look back at the Celtics and say that when you're going to be a star, Danny Ainge will give you the run and he'll let you do what you want to do. But when he drafts you to be a role player, like a Romeo Langford or an Aaron Nesmith, those guys didn't get shit. Their leash was as small as any guy's leash could be. So maybe that's the thing, is we've seen star pop from Keontae George, and there was never a plan for Taylor Hendricks to be a star. I think, you know, if you want to criticize Danny Ainge's the way that he drafts players and the way that he uses them, I think we've got some evidence over his years in the Celtics and what he's doing right now. But yeah, I agree that it's weird. It's also having John Collins and Lauri Markkanen be two power forwards playing at the same time that makes putting another power forward on the floor a little difficult. But Taylor Hendricks, you know, me and you think this guy would be an impact guy immediately. If he was playing 20 minutes a night, the Jazz would be better for it.
Yeah, you make a good point. John Collins and Lauri Markkanen are two power forwards playing all the time. The point that I get confused about is Fontecchio getting 20 minutes a night over Taylor Hendricks. Like, Fontecchio has been a fun story, but it's like, you drafted this guy in the top 10 of the NBA draft. His skill set is tailor-made to an NBA team. How is he not being able to stretch his legs right now? I know he had some injuries in the summer league. So, like, is it that? I have no idea. There's been very little coverage of it. But hopefully he gets a chance to play soon, maybe in the second half of the season.
Yeah, I hope so. Moving on to number 10. OKC traded up to take Cason Wallace, and I think they love that decision. Cason Wallace is another one of those dudes that I have loved since the very beginning of this draft process. To me, this guy is 85-90% of what Drew Holiday is. Excellent guard defender, can hit the catch and shoot three, can hit the pass, can be an impact guy on all levels as a guard. And, you know, he's maybe the ninth option, the eighth option. Sometimes he starts, but really he's just out there to be a guy. But I love this pick so much for OKC.
Yeah, what's interesting with this selection is he's basically made Josh Giddey expendable. Right. Like they wouldn't care if Josh Giddey was released from their roster tomorrow because Cason Wallace can fill in and give them actually more of what they need than Giddey can with the 3-point shooting and the point of attack defense that Giddey does not offer. You were a massive fan of his throughout the draft process, and he kind of is exactly what you thought he'd be, which is just a really good basketball player. Like, there's not a whole lot more to explain it. Like, he makes the right play. He does the dirty work. He's fine passing the ball. He's fine shooting the ball. Give him a task and he will do it for you. And I think coaches love Swiss Army guys like that. Obviously, he's limited in opportunity still because OKC's so talented that he's not getting as many shooting opportunities as other players. That's why we see the extremely low raw stats from him. I think, what is it? Yeah, 7 points, 2 rebounds, 1.5 assists. But the efficiency is a really good sign. And as we see him later on in his career, when he gets more opportunity, hopefully that stays the same.
Yeah, 53% from the field, 43% from three. Those are really good numbers. Those are really promising. I said before the season started, Cason Wallace was going to take Lu Dort's starting spot. I felt pretty confident about that. He might take Josh Giddey's starting spot. But he's coming for it, man. One of those players, he's coming for it. I think the comp that I texted you about him the other day was Derek White. And that was because kind of what you just said about the shot attempts. If Cason Wallace is only taking 4 shots, 3 shots in a game, he doesn't care. If they need him to take 8, he'll take 8. If they need him to make good passes, he'll make good passes. He's one of those guys that whatever the role they need for him that night, however it grows and shrinks from night to night, he'll handle any task.
Yeah, and that's what every single coach in the NBA wants. And we're seeing Derek White be basically the third best player on a team that's setting historical records for net rating right now. So if Cason Wallace can be Derek White, OKC fans will be very happy.
Absolutely. We got a quick one here at number 11, Jet Howard. Womp. Bad pick from the Magic. He's played 36 minutes so far. They drafted him because he's 6'10" and supposedly could shoot the 3-ball and be a good offensive creator. But he's played 36 NBA minutes so far. So not much to be said about Jet Howard.
No, super disappointing, especially with some of the guys we're about to mention. It makes no sense.
Yeah. Moving on to number 12, Derek Lively to the Mavs. This was another excellent fit. In terms of A-plus fits for this draft, Derek Lively's one of the top ones. You want a guy who can roll to the rim. You want a guy who can dunk. You want a guy who can play good defense as a big body, and you don't ask him to do anything else. That's Derek Lively.
Yeah, and this is a pat myself on my back type player for this year's draft, where just the fit was so perfect for what Dallas needed. And the talent that he displayed was, I'm good at catching alley-oops. I'm okay with moving the ball. I'm an above average rebounder. And I have mobile feet on defense and I can protect the rim. You couldn't have made a list for a player that Dallas needed more. And this is where we start talking about like fit versus talent in the NBA draft. Sometimes the fit is so perfect where it actually exemplifies what a player is good at. We're seeing Derek Lively shoot 73% from the floor right now because his entire shot diet is dump offs in the paint and alley oops. So I couldn't think his career could start off any better.
Yeah, my only argument with you is that he was never an above average rebounder. His averages for the season were 5 points and 5 boards, and he's 7 feet tall. So I thought this was a bum. We have had off-pod conversations about Derek Lively versus Bismack Biyombo. You know, I really did not have a lot of good things to think about Derek Lively just because of how bad the offense looked. But you're right, man. You put him in this role. This is exactly what a guy like Derek Lively should be used for. It was awkward over there at Duke with another 7-footer and Kyle Filipowski trying to figure out his role. We've seen just throwing him in a situation where he can be a lob catcher and a big body to play defense. That's what Derek Lively does best.
Yeah, exactly. And when you mentioned the rebounding and just how you thought of him at first, you're 100% right. When he started with Duke, he was like putting up 3 and 3, like on a nightly basis. There was a point in the season last year for Duke where they hit a run where Derek Lively started all of a sudden just becoming like an absolute monster where he would have like 9 blocks and 11 boards. That's kind of more of what I'm referencing. And when it comes to what you thought of him at first, you thought this was a guy that wasn't an NBA player. Like, you thought he belonged in China.
Yes.
And I was trying to tell you, like, if you just get him in the right spot, and that's why I kept mocking him to 12, because I thought if he went there, he'd be a good NBA player. And fortunately for me, my prediction has come true with him. He has been exactly what I've expected from him.
Yeah, I saw a guy averaging a 4-4 stat line being mocked at top 15, and I was upset. I was genuinely, no chance was that happening. But I was wrong, man. And it's good that we have these opinions on the podcast so we can look back on them and laugh. I had nothing but contempt for Derek Lively, and I was dead wrong. Moving on to number 13, Grady Dick for Toronto. What a disappointment, man. Yeah. This is not a guy who has gotten the kind of run that I wanted him to get. And maybe with the recent OG trade and with the kind of step back that the Raptors are going to take, maybe he does get the kind of run. But as of right now, in 200 minutes, he's shooting 25% from three. And that's really his only skill, shooting the three ball. So a little bit worried about Grady Dick.
Yeah, we should be. We should be. When you're a rookie is getting attention only because his name is sexual, that's an issue. That's a huge issue.
Yeah.
Like, that, it's pretty bad. I always comped him to Bogdan Bogdanovic, the one on the Hawks. I thought that was his high-end output. And I'm even a little bit nervous about that right now, which is scary if you're using a lottery pick on a guy that you need desperately spacing from, and he can't give you that. So this is, Toronto fans should be a little bit worried.
Toronto fans should be very upset because of the guy who was taken directly after him, who will just move right to. Jordan Hawkins is exactly who people thought Grady Dick was going to be. Very great movement shooter. Very great movement shooter. The Pelicans are all over the place. This is another one of those teams that I don't know if they fully know who they are yet. But in the games where they give Jordan Hawkins run, I mean, he's shooting 36% on 6 threes a game, and the degree of difficulty on some of those threes, it's got to be higher than any other rookie shooting a lot of threes right now.
Yeah, he is basically Duncan Robinson.
Yeah.
And if you're looking for spacing, there's kind of not a better option than that guy because of the shots they take, right, where they're sprinting at full speed, turning their body, squaring their shoulders, and making threes that are contested. It just, these guys make shots that are at the highest degree of difficulty. So even if you see the 36% from him, it's way better than an actual 36 stand still in the corner shooter.
Yes.
This guy is taking crazy, crazy shots, and he's making crazy, crazy shots.
Yeah. And outside of that, man, is there really anything else to Jordan Hawkins' game? Not really.
No. No.
And that's okay. When you take a guy at 14, you're looking for, I need a role filled. And the role the Pelicans needed filled was high volume 3-point shooting. And they went and found the perfect guy.
Yeah. And there are teams above them that needed the same thing and didn't trust his shooting, his entire skill set. And it bit them in the ass, right? Grady Dick was a better passer than Jordan Hawkins in college. Do you think Toronto's happy with their decision right now? Or Jet Howard was taller than Jordan Hawkins. Do you think Orlando's happy with their decision now? They just made the wrong call. I'm happy for New Orleans. They made the right one.
I agree. At number 15, Kobe Bufkin. This one's just sad. We'll talk about it for a second because me and you both love this kid. He's only played 4 minutes in the NBA. He's dealt with a bunch of injuries. The Hawks are so loaded at the guard position. Honestly, there's no hope for Kobe Bufkin to get a lot of minutes on this team. Something's going to have to change, which sucks because he's such a NBA-ready guard.
Yeah, this one, I'm going to eat crow here. I was a big proponent of his. This is one I missed on. I don't think it's a coincidence he's getting. The injury stuff is never a good way to start your NBA career. The logjam at guard that me and you definitely had concerns about and addressed has been too tough for him to kind of break through, which is something I didn't foresee happening. I'm not saying I'm done on him forever, but I'm just saying for the year, I think I'm kind of waving my white flag with him being a good rookie. I thought he was going to make an all-rookie team. That is definitely not happening.
Yeah, definitely not. You know, maybe there's a world where Atlanta makes that Pascal Siakam trade that's been dangling in front of them for so long, and maybe Kobe Bufkin gets a little bit of a window. But for now, he's not playing. Number 16, Keyonte George. I'm going to give myself a big old pat on the back to start this one. I said this guy was going to be an all-star, and I am still on it, man. Keontae George is so much fun. The efficiency isn't there yet, and I don't think anybody thought it was going to be. I certainly didn't. But in terms of just entertaining play, cool passes, really nice, you know, looking shot, I love what I see from Keontae George on a night-to-night basis.
Yeah, I'm with you on this. You know, you were a way bigger fan of him than I was. I'm kind of still on my – he's higher – he has a higher ceiling than I initially thought, but I'm still not sold. I do kind of still foresee him as maybe a plus Jordan Clarkson. But, you know, he's had games where he's, like, closing games for Utah. As a rookie ball handler taking game-winning shots for Utah when he has guys on his team that are just so much clearly better than him, there's a confidence to him that I've really enjoyed. And clearly Danny Ainge trusts him, like we mentioned earlier, to give him the run he's giving him. So I've been a fan. I'm excited to watch more. I want him to prove me wrong. I want him to prove you right. I'd love to see him be an all-star for Utah. So I'm excited to keep watching. I've been moderately impressed with him.
Yeah, so the numbers do not paint this kid as an all-star yet. The numbers say 11 points, 3 rebounds, 5 assists a game, sub 40% from the field. And if you watched him at Baylor, efficiency was absolutely an issue of his at Baylor. But the passing is what I'm most in love with. He's right now, I mean, you talk about plus Jordan Clarkson. I think he's already a better passer. Jordan Clarkson's career assists per game is 5. That's his best season. He had 5 assists per game, and that's what Keontae George is doing as a rookie. And the confidence they have in him to leave him out there in important minutes makes me really, really excited. But until the efficiency gets itself sorted, he's got a long way to go to be an all-star. He's going to be fun as hell, but in terms of like actually serious impact, you can't be at 37% from the field.
And to be fair, like that, those were our concerns with him in college. The shot selection was just ridiculous. Yes. And the turnovers and the limited passing repertoire he had was why we had some concerns.
Because he thinks he can hit every shot.
Right. And when he's on, he can.
Right.
There, he has to be in that zone. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, you know, he will have to taper off at some point. Let's move on to Jalen Hood-Schifino for the Los Angeles Lakers. This was a huge whiff. I hated this pick so much when it happened. Go back and listen to our reactions after draft night. I just didn't understand it at all. Like, I really had no idea what they were doing. So I don't want to pat myself on the back, but I guess I have to.
Yeah, they went and drafted a defensive first guard for a team that didn't need a defensive first guard and didn't have any room for him. And it's a defensive first guard who really struggles in the half court offense. And again, not a thing the Lakers are really looking for right now. So he's only played 60 minutes so far in his career. This was just not a great landing spot. But, you know, I think the verdict is still a little bit early in terms of, can this guy be a kind of guy who can be a seventh man, who can be a good backup point guard? Because I think that was my thing for him. My comp for him was a really solid backup point guard.
I would like that to happen. I would like that to happen. Obviously, as we approach, you know, the late teens and the 20s, our ceilings for these guys drastically get lower and they're more likely to miss. But, you know, there was just something about that fit that really rubbed me the wrong way, especially with a LeBron and Anthony Davis led team where they're expecting greatness for you to get on the court. You can't be a bum and play with them. So it didn't really feel like he had room to make mistakes. So we'll see how that works out. But let's move on to a massive W at pick 18, Jaime Jaquez Jr. for the Miami Heat. This guy going this late is a weird in retrospect, right? We have these guys every single year that drop because they're old and then are better than the players that are selected above them. This guy's probably third in rookie of the year. And just in terms of career outlook, I mentioned this comparison to you before we started potting. A young Gordon Hayward, like a sneaky athlete, fine in like footwork and mid-range jumpers are where he makes his living. And he's just a competent passer and rebounder and defender as well. This was a steal.
This is one of those guys that in my mock draft, I might have had around 26, 27. Because it's at the point in the draft where teams are not looking for a guy with a crazy ceiling and they're really looking to take a guy who can impact winning now. And right. I think we kind of do have to start changing our thinking about that in terms of, if you know this guy's going to be good, why not take him earlier? Why not take the surefire thing instead of trying to swing on some guy who you know has so many flaws? Jaime Jaquez doesn't have the ceiling of most of the guys drafted in this draft, but he's playing better than most of them. He's averaging 14 points, 4 boards, 2.5 assists a game. He put up 30 the other night on Philly. This is a guy who knows what he's doing from day one, and that's the exact kind of player that Miami drafts.
Yeah, and it's at this spot in the draft, too. Like, those are what contenders want. Rookies that can come in and actually help them. And Miami is a contender, whether we want to admit it or not. They will be in the mix, and they have a rookie they can rely on. And that matters.
Yeah, man. Even in games, you know, Jimmy Butler's missed as many as he's missed. Tyler Hero's only played 15 games. Bam Adebayo's missed a dozen or 10 games at least. Jaime Jaquez has been there game after game, consistent, played all 33 games, and he's just a rock solid role player for the team. Whatever they're asking for him, he's going to give, and not a little bit more than they need, not a little bit less than they need. This is a lock for an all rookie team. This guy.
100%.
Let's keep going through the list. Brandon Podziemski. This guy, I think it was another guy that me and you both said, this is a guy who impacts winning right away. This is a guy who I'm kind of surprised went 19th, but in retrospect, I don't think we'll find it that crazy. And it's not that crazy. He is battling Klay Thompson for his minutes. He's battling Moses Moody for those minutes. I'm loving what I'm seeing from Podziemski.
Yeah, he's a really good basketball player. He is one of those guys that we kind of mentioned, like Cason Wallace, just makes the right play every single play. And to get that play from a rookie, and this, he was only a second year player too. He was a sophomore when he was drafted. So this isn't a guy who spent 4 years in college. No, this is just his natural instinct as a basketball player. I've been really impressed with him. And I think Klay does need to watch out.
Yeah, he's younger than the Thompson twins. So, you know, these guys, you know, playing 1 year in college, getting that experience, 2 years in college, that doesn't make you, you know, it doesn't remove your ceiling completely. I think a lot of times we pretend like a guy's coming in at 21, 22, he's just never going to get any better than what he is from day one. And even if that was the case, Podziemski is a dude who is going to stick around in Golden State for the future, I think, with all of the issues that they've had drafting. They absolutely nailed the Podziemski pick, and we'll talk about it a little bit later, but they absolutely nailed the Trayce Jackson-Davis pick.
Yes, and we are approaching a point in the draft where a lot of these guys don't matter. We'll talk about Cam Whitmore because he was such a high-profile name, and there was even a shot he went fifth overall. But other than that, we're going to start doing some rapid fire here. But with Cam Whitmore, both of us were like absolutely awestruck and that he dropped to where he dropped. I think I had him going to Utah at 9 instead of Taylor Hendricks in my mock draft. He dropped to 20. What are your thoughts on just like what he's done? Because he hasn't gotten a ton of NBA minutes, but he is cooking in the G League.
He's cooking in the G League, man. And this is, you know, another guy where the Rockets have no idea where they're supposed to put him. And I think Ime's trying to kind of just going with the strategy that, like, we're going to just make do with the guys that I know what they can produce in the NBA. Cam Whitmore is still a bit of a question mark. I wouldn't be surprised if we go this whole season without him playing serious minutes in the NBA and basically just being a G League dominator. But when you've got that explosiveness, man, that he does, I just envision a world where Cam Whitmore, Amen Thompson, and Jalen Green are all on the floor at the same time, just dropping bombs on the people that they play against. And that excites me. But I don't know, realistically, is that an actual roster that works in the NBA? I don't know.
It all kind of depends on Whitmore shooting and Amen shooting.
Yeah.
Whitmore is a better shooter than Amen, for sure. But that's still something we had to worry about with him. And just his playmaking chops as well was his biggest red flag, where his assist numbers were absolutely horrible. But in the spot minutes he has played in the NBA, he looks the part athletically. And just from his three-point percentage, he shot, I think, 37% in very limited minutes and very limited attempts. But he really does remind me of, like, budget Jaylen Brown. So if Houston can cultivate that in the G League and then have him as a contributor next year as like an off the bench spark plug, I'd be very happy with that outcome.
I agree. Let's fast forward. Let's skip through the Nets picks pretty quickly. Noah Clowney and Dariq Whitehead have only played two games so far. Neither of them have done pretty much anything. And on a Nets team that's sub 500, if they were good enough to play, they'd be playing right now. Omax Prosper, picked by the Kings. Another guy, he ended up on Dallas, didn't he? Another guy who's kind of just a plus in every category was his hypothetical, good at everything, not great at anything. And so far, I don't know that he's been good in anything.
Correct.
Marcus Sasser. I thought this was an excellent pick by Detroit. This is a short guard who knows how to play basketball right away, knows how to pass the ball to teammates, and knows how to hit, catch, and shoot threes. That's exactly what we're seeing from him.
Yeah, he's been one of the redeeming things about Detroit this year. There hasn't been a lot, but he's been a good pick for them.
This was a great pick. I loved this one. Ben Shepherd to Indiana. This was like a who the hell is this guy sort of thing. Older prospect, can be a catch and shoot guy, could be a plus wing, really isn't doing anything of anything.
No.
Nick Smith Jr., I'll let you take this one.
Yeah, I was a fan of his for a long time. I had him as a lottery pick. I kept defending him. No, the creativity, what I watched in high school, will shine through. Don't worry. This guy's a bum.
Yeah. And, you know, 6 points per game. There's some moments where he's out there and he's doing cool dribble moves. He's the kind of guy where when he's dribbling downhill, that's when he's at his best. That's when he's doing his coolest stuff. But when you put him in the half-court setting, it all kind of crumbles a little bit.
Also, really quick with just players like Nick Smith, I think I'm going to start paying attention to body types that work in the NBA. Because if you look at Nick Smith, like, he's 170 pounds soaking wet. Lou Williams is probably the best example of that body type working in the NBA. And there's this kid coming up in next year's NBA draft that people love called named Rob Dillingham, who has the same exact body type as Nick Smith, Lou Williams. So I'm just curious, and I just wanted to throw that out there because I think that body type really limits you as a basketball player when you're literally 165 pounds.
Yeah, man, because Nick Smith was crafty as hell in high school, man. And that's the thing with Rob Dillingham is when he's playing these young guys, and even in the OTE stuff, he's crafty as hell. He's doing some fancy, fancy shit. But are you going to be a legit NBA player? Like, you got to be a star to be able to have that role when you make it to the NBA. And a guy like Nick Smith just isn't at that level. Bryce Sensabaugh, Ice Bryce, 5 minutes played in the NBA so far. He's dominating the G League. And this is a dude who's just an absolute bucket getter. Another one of the weird stories in Utah where this guy clearly could get NBA minutes. We're just not playing him. That one's weird to me.
That one's weird for me as well.
Julian Strother, excellent pick to Denver. Excellent pick to Denver. He's been just another plus young guy. Obviously, I think we kind of overhyped their young guys and the Christian Brown, Peyton Watson, Julian Strother, all of them. But they absolutely bring impact. Julian Strother's had a couple of great games, and obviously he's a rookie who was picked 29th. We got to have realistic expectations for him. But I'm happy with it, what he's produced.
Yeah, I am too. We overrated their bench big time. I was a huge Peyton Watson guy. I was telling the whole world, watch out for this dude. He's okay.
Yeah.
He's a good defender, but there's not a lot there on offense. And I feel the exact inverse about Julian Strother, where he's just he's pretty good on offense and then nothing really on defense, and he's just okay.
Yeah. The last guy, Kobe Brown, played 200 minutes so far for the Clippers. This is just a big senior who kind of knew what he was doing at all levels. But not a guy who's a crazy impact guy. He's averaging 2.5 points a game. He's played, 200 minutes. Not a crazy story with him.
Right. Now we have to get to the second round, and there's basically no one we have to talk about except for one guy. Trayce Jackson-Davis. We were kind of stunned by this. His statistical output at, I believe, Indiana was so ridiculous that I think on raw numbers alone, we thought he'd be a late first-round flyer, just disregarding his age and his body type and stuff like that. I thought I don't know. Both of us were just like, what the fuck happened? And we gave that pick, that second-round pick, I think an A, just because they got a first-round talent as a second-round talent. He's actually playing important minutes for them. What have you thought about this storyline for Golden State?
The play has really started from Draymond's suspension. Before that, I don't know that he had played more than 40 minutes on the season. He's at 270 now. And we're seeing a heads up big man who, you know, he's exactly what we pegged him to be. He's not a crazy athlete. He's not an insane basketball player, but he knows what he's doing in his role. And he fills it really well. The game he played against the Celtics, I loved his play. For a pick at 57, we both kind of felt like there's no way this guy doesn't get minutes.
Yeah, which is very uncommon for late second round picks. You just don't really see that ever. And, you know, he played against Dallas the other night. He had 17 points on 8 of 11 shooting. And then the night before that against Miami, he had 10 points, but with 11 boards, both of these coming off the bench. That is like incredible bench output from an NBA vet, never mind a rookie. So
this was a win from Golden State. This is a great draft selection from Golden State. With all of the weirdness surrounding Draymond Green, it's good to know that there's somebody on their bench. There's a real big on their bench who they can put in. I want to put you on the spot here. Number 6 among all rookies in the 2023 draft in terms of minutes played, Portland's Toumani Kamara. He's played 775 minutes so far for the Blazers. Have you watched any of it? Because I haven't.
I've watched Scoot, so clearly I'm just not paying attention to this man. Because I have no idea who the fuck that is.
Averaging 7 points, 5 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal a game. 775 minutes. He's playing.
Does he have blonde hair, actually? I might know who this is.
Dark hair. Oh, okay. 6'8", lefty power forward.
I know.
He's played 775 minutes, more than Keontae George, more than Lively, more than Cason Wallace.
Yeah, that's crazy. And actually, one more rookie we forgot is just Amani Bates. I think with the hype surrounding him all throughout high school, we have to at least just talk about him for a second.
Take the floor.
He's been virtually non-existent. Yeah. He's just a guy who touches the ball in the corner and, you know, maybe takes a shot or two. He's been more willing to pass the ball than maybe I was expecting from him. Overall, can't say anything super positive about what he's done for the Cavs. So.
It's very, very early for Amani Bates. And even then, we did not expect him to be a guy who was playing serious minutes his rookie year. But, you know, to shoot 24%, is it, from the field in his first 76 minutes? Not good. Not a great start.
Was Craig Porter Jr. undrafted this year?
I believe so.
Okay, so just quickly on him, just because he's a rookie, for my Cleveland Cavs, this is like one of the steadier players on my team. Like on the entire Cavaliers roster, he's one of the more steady players. We've talked a lot about heads up basketball players this episode and just guys who make competent decisions on a game to game basis. That's what he is for us when we have guys like Caris LeVert taking stupid shots and just random people trying to get buckets. Craig Porter Jr. is a pace setter and a floor setter, and like he is a good NBA player. I have no doubts that he'll be a bench guy for the rest of his NBA career.
I have no doubt, man. You know, for a undrafted guy to be thrown into the mix the way that Craig Porter has with all of the injuries that they've dealt with, he's handled it better than I think anyone would have expected. This was... You know, for me, when I was looking at box scores and not watching the Cavs, this was a big, like, who kind of moment where I saw Craig Porter Jr. get legit minutes, but he impacts winning, man. He's out there doing his shit.
Yeah, he's been really impressive. So I'm glad that the Cavs got at least one rookie to brag about this year.
Absolutely. You know, it's kind of early. We're what, a little bit more than a quarter way through the season? But there's not a lot of movement that I expect in terms of like how these rookies are going to change over the season. Scoot Henderson, I think, is the biggest question mark in terms of how is he going to grow. But a lot of these guys kind of feel like what they're doing right now is who they are on the year. Is there anybody that you feel like hasn't proved themselves and hasn't like shown themselves for who they really are yet? I think it might be Amen Thompson.
It might be Amen. My pick's weird. I think I might go Wemby here.
That's fair.
I just think this level of efficiency is stupid. I don't really agree with it at all. We've always had a little bit of concern with his shot selection, but I think this is being amplified. Like, I don't think this is the real version of this. This is being amplified his weaknesses right now. because of how garbage everything else is around him.
Yeah.
Like, I think when March comes along and teams start throwing in their backups for 35 minutes a game, we're just going to start seeing gaudy numbers from him, like 26 and 12 every single night. That's kind of my take, which is weird. I don't know what that says, but I really do think it's him.
I think you're right. And the only thing that would stop that is, for whatever reason, Greg Popovich deciding not to play this man 30 minutes, 34 minutes a night. You know, other people have talked about it, but like, you see the Chetty Osmond, Zach Collins pick and roll, and you're like, I'm watching the Spurs for one reason, and it's Wembanyama. Get him out of the goddamn corner. Right. That's how I feel when I watch the Spurs night after night. And you're right. Once we get to the point where we're playing trash teams night after night, the game plan has to be give the ball to Wemby and let him cook.
Right. And I just don't. It's really actually frustrating me this year, because I do feel like Spurs fans were led astray. I think NBA fans were led astray by what we were getting with Wembanyama this year, right? And I don't believe it's the talent. That's the thing that's frustrating me. I think it's the way he's being used and the talent surrounding him. So I do feel like we were sold a bill of goods that we weren't actually given. I think Wemby's just going to pop off at the end of the year and then kind of ease everyone's mind.
I think so too. And if that does happen, he'll end the season over 20 points a game, and the Rookie of the Year race is going to be harder, man. Even though those games aren't going to be crazy impactful, the numbers that he's going to put up are going to have people talking.
Yeah, for sure. And also, rookie scorers that score over 20 points per game in NBA history is a pretty good list you want to be on. Mm-hmm. There are some weird exceptions like Ben Gordon and Tyreek Evans, but for the most part, like Michael Jordan, LeBron James, Magic Johnson, Luka Doncic, like all guys that are first ballot Hall of Famers.
Paolo last year hit that mark.
True. And look at what he's doing right now, right? He's like bona fide number one option on a top four seed in the East. So I would love for Wemby to hit that mark, and then for San Antonio to do some grunt work in the offseason to get him a proper team.
I totally agree. I think that's it, though, for rookie reviews. JP, you got anything else before we get out of here?
Nah, I got nothing.
Awesome. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll catch you later. Peace.
Peace.